Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it.
So,
hello, mate. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I had a really nice weekend. Obviously, like we keep getting blessed with this really nice weather. How lucky are
you? I know. It makes such a difference, doesn't
it? And when I got back from work on Sunday, Dozer had already had two gin and tonics and a beer. He was like drinking whilst parenting. Excellent. And so I just got stuck in, and we had like a bit of an afternoon in the garden. We had the paddling pool out. We had the tunes on. We were dancing. It was amazing. It just felt like a little bit of freedom.
Nice.
And the kids were dancing so much. They were choosing all of their favourite songs on the Alexa, and it turned into a bit of like a garden, like a house party. It was fun.
with toddlers. It sounds fun. Yeah, it was really nice, actually. We just, James is loads better now. So we're sort of just getting back to normal again, which is good. So he's, you know, like up and about and doing stuff again, which is has been so nice for me because it means I haven't just been stuck with the kids on my own. So yeah, I mean, I don't really get that weekend thing. I know you do because obviously you get to go to work for those 2 days at the weekend. So it was just like any other, you know, couple
any
of
other
days.
Day.
Yeah.
I managed into lockdown now.
Yeah, I know. It's nuts, but I'm actually starting to feel a bit scared. Like when they're like, oh, you know, 3 weeks, and then there's rumours going around that schools might open mid-May. I'm like, well, I've got to go back to getting up and out of the house by whatever time, and then I've got to rush to school. I don't think I'm up for it.
Yeah, also just the outfits. Like I literally spend every single day with my lycra and a hoodie on or a vest top, and I'm going to actually have to, like, you know, put makeup on and get into my jeans again.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been dressed once in what, 6 weeks. Like actually dressed, like with normal clothes on, once in 6 weeks. I have not put makeup on for 6 weeks, not a scrap.
I caught myself in the mirror the other day and I looked at my face. My pigmentation's come back really badly because I'm having to take some hormone tablets at the moment. So it's really coming out, and obviously the sun and stuff. I looked at my face and I was like, grey hair. You could see my tash. Hadn't plucked my eyebrows. I was like, no wonder I'm not leaving the house. Thank God I'm not leaving the house.
I know, that's what I'm scared for. I'm like, all the maintenance again. I'm like, I don't think I'm up for it. I don't think I can cope with it, actually. I hope they ease us in gradually anyway, you know, like, well, you can go out for 1 day a week. I think, oh yeah, okay, get my head around getting dressed once, that's fine. And then next week, 2 days. But yeah.
I was thinking about what people are doing at home with their like DIY home beauty. Like, how bad has it got? Because you're hearing a lot of couples are like cutting each other's hair.
Yes.
And you saw TV the other day, Eddie was bleaching, like doing her highlights with like a cap and pulling the pieces of hair through. And I was like, there's no way in the world I'd let Dozer do that to me.
Oh my God, absolutely not. I mean, I'm fine. You know, like, I'll let the roots grow out, but I am going to message my hairdresser like the second the appointment is reopened. I am in there. I mean, surely blondes have got to take priority. Blondes have got to take priority. Blondes' roots are so much worse than anyone else's.
Let's get into the chat today. This is a conversation that you and I had before lockdown. So a couple of months back with just one of the most amazing people. I'd actually met him previously because he works in telly as well. And he started off on Blue Peter and then he moved over to Sky. And then he had one of the worst things ever to happen to him, to happen to anybody in their lives. His partner, his wife died. But it has a happy ending, doesn't it? And we really wanted to kind of get him on to tell us his story on how he navigated that grief whilst also trying to raise his son. So today we're chatting to
Simon Thomas.
So one of the things that we wanted to do in series four was to get a whole host of really amazing dads in the room. And the man sitting opposite us today is one of the best out there. And he's been through a hell of a journey the last 2.5 years. Obviously, a Sky broadcaster, not doing it anymore, but that's where he kind of honed his craft as a presenter. He has a blog. He's father to Ethan, who is now 10.
He is. Yeah.
He is. It's Simon Thomas.
Hello.
Simon, welcome.
Lovely to be here.
It's really, really great to have
you
in.
It's a lovely studio, by the way.
Do you like it?
Yeah, love it.
Yeah, tea, biscuits.
Feel very at home.
So you should. Now, Simon, this episode, we really wanted to obviously talk to you about your situation going on at the moment with the fact that you obviously very, very sadly lost your wife.
Yeah.
2.5 years ago. Mm. So we don't want the episode to be about that and the time of grief. We want to kind of talk about your life as a single parent. Mm-hmm. But could you just kind of fill us in on what happened?
So very briefly, it was November 2017. Everything was good family-wise. I mean, a separate thing, which was quite big for me at the time, I was going through some quite pronounced mental health problems. So I was having anxiety, panic attacks, depression. So I'd come away from Sky. While that was happening, Gemma was beginning to complain of headaches that became very regular, very elongated. This was only over the space of about 2 to 3 weeks, and 3 trips to the doctors, 3 times, told to go home and rest. But then got very, very bad fatigue. So we went to A&E in Reading on a Monday night in the early hours of Tuesday. She was diagnosed with blood cancer, didn't know which one. Then get transferred to a specialist hospital in Oxford, where she's diagnosed on a Tuesday afternoon with what's known as acute myeloid leukemia, which is thankfully, it's a very rare form of blood cancer, affects around about 3,000 in the UK. But for those it does affect, it's absolutely devastating. But the complication she had, it is thankfully quite rare. And she developed this very bad bleeding within her brain by the Friday. So 3 days from diagnosis, she had died by the evening of the Friday. So very, very rapid, no time to prepare, no time for conversations about life, and particularly no time for conversations about Ethan and bringing him up without a mum. So it was just launched on us very, very rapidly. And yeah, it was a can I swear?
Yeah,
of course, yeah.
It was horrendously shit. That's as strong as I'll go.
Yeah. Yeah. And during that week, how honest were you with Ethan about what was going on?
I was kind of steered by her consultant a little bit because I had no time for reading books or ringing counsellors or anything like that. And on the morning that the doctor sat down with me after she'd fallen unconscious and said the news that she wasn't going to wake up again and had hours, I said, well, what do I do? What's best to do with Ethan? He came to see her on the Wednesday, obviously knew she was ill, didn't know the severity of it. We hadn't mentioned the big C word at this point. But then you're dealing with hours, so you've got to react. What do you do? And his advice was, he's at an age, so he was 8 at the time, he's at an age where in the years to come, you don't necessarily need to tell him everything about what's happening. But in the years to come, he'll thank you for the fact that he was able to go and see mum one last time. Yeah. And actually, even now, 2.5 years on, I know that that was an important moment for him. And I never said that mum is going, but I said she's very, very seriously ill. And so he came in to see her twice in that day and then headed home. And then, of course, later that evening, I had to tell him the worst news ever. So he was kind of very aware of it. And when we got to the funeral, you know, I chatted with kids counsellors about that, what kind of level of information do you need to give them? You know, an 8-year-old, they're at that age where they will just keep asking questions. So she said to me, be prepared when you start talking about the service, and then you start talking about the wake, and then you start talking about the crematorium and all that. He'll want to know every time, probably, what's going to happen next. And that's a horror. It's a bad enough conversation to have with an adult.
Yeah, of course.
But with an 8-year-old kid, you don't want to be kind of busting his world with details on what a crematorium is. But we went there, and actually, I'm glad we did. Not a conversation you ever, ever want to have with your kid. But if it comes, you'll look back and be glad actually you had that conversation in the years to come.
I mean, your whole life at that point is turned upside down because all of your dreams and everything that you had attached to
yes.
the relationship and having yeah. your son and everything, mm. you expect to do it together as a team,
yeah,
two of you.
Of
so you then wake up as a single parent, mm. as a widow,
mm.
you know, it's horrendous for you. So mm. how do you even start piecing your life back together just being solo dad?
I think in the first weeks, it was the love of friends and family that kind of got us through. But I think having a child is the biggest driver of you taking life on again and getting out of bed every morning. Yeah, he was back at school a week later.
Wow. Well, and how was it for you going to school?
That first one was horrendous.
Yeah.
And not because of anyone at the school, but it just was. And there might be people listening, goodness me, that's very quick to go back. But the reason was, and I was very reluctant for him to go back. I didn't want time away from him. I wanted him as close. You know, we decamped, so we've got this lovely farmhouse that we live in Reading, right by the Thames. And we've got kind of three floors, so the top floor, two guest rooms in the attic. And so we decamped up there. I didn't return to my room, as I now call it, or our room, for 6 months.
Really?
And Ethan was kind of, I made a sort of camp area at the end of my bed, and we slept in the same room for 6 months. I just didn't want him apart.
Oh, that's yeah. so lovely.
And it was really hard in going back to school because I don't want 6 hours without him, and I worry about how he's going to be. But the kids' counsellors, and they're amazingly wise. It was Daisy's Dream, with the charity we were dealing with in Berkshire. They just said, he needs to go back because at the moment his life will feel like everything that he knew as life is disappearing, and school is a foundation stone within his life. So
yeah.
if that goes as well, if you take him out of school for 6-7 weeks or he doesn't go back before Christmas, he's going to think, everything I knew as life now is disappearing. So what is my life anymore? So she said, mm. you need to put those foundation stones back in the knowledge, of course, everything is now different. And yeah, walking in that first, it was a Friday, and his school were amazing. You know, his teacher and his headmaster came round on the Thursday. His class had written this amazing kind of, well, they put together this book just of letters from every single kid in his class. Well, it must be slightly emotional to talk about, because I can picture some of them just like, we miss you, we're so sorry. You know, these are 8-year-old kids. They haven't gone through something like this yet. They had this amazing empathy for him.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a very surreal walk, because you walk back in and you're dealing with kind of two things. One is you're dealing with people who don't know how to deal with you.
Yeah.
They don't. They're like, what? Because I think what it is, what I've learned with kind of grief, is that we're all going to go through it at some point, unless you check out early. Hopefully no one listening will. But we're going to lose a parent at some stage. If the natural order of things happens, then we know that at some point we will deal with the loss of a parent. That's hugely painful. But if a parent has had a long life, a good life, we have a reference point. We expect it, and therefore we know how to vocalize it. I'm so sorry to hear about your mum, but well, you know, what an amazing life she had. You know,
yeah.
what a great innings, and all the kind of phrases we attach to a long life. When something like this happens and it's tragic, a life's cut short, a child loses mum, what the hell do you say? And there yeah. were some who literally, as I walked in, were kind of, you could see them sort of swerving to the other side. But others just came up and gave me a hug. Those who didn't know what to say or how to vocalize how they were feeling were just lay a hand on my shoulder. And in that moment, that was enough. That was enough, because they were acknowledging it in their way. And yeah, it was very bizarre, because then you sort of stood in the sort of waiting area by the playground for the gate to open, and around you is the hubbub of normal life.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest challenge, I think, for anybody who goes through bereavement, is accepting, and it does take a while, accepting that whatever has just happened in your life, however big it is and however transformational it is and however much life just feels completely different, everything carries on around you.
So it's an amazing feeling, that, actually, isn't it? And yeah. I can only relate to it yeah. when I lost my dad very suddenly. And you know, he was 70, but that for me wasn't long enough. I felt
yeah.
like I had missed out on
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And when I remember coming back into London kind of a couple of weeks afterwards, and I felt like I had this like sign above my head saying, my dad's just died, but everybody around me was laughing.
They don't see it.
There was noise. And,
yeah.
and I was like, it was quite a sort of wake up call that life just carries on. And
yeah.
you have to deal with the new norm yourself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a very weird concept.
Yeah. Mm. And you're obviously having to parent through that grief. So your priority is looking after Ethan, but you've lost your soulmate. You've lost your best friend, your wife. So that personal grief must have been huge for you.
Yeah, you're dealing with kind of multi-layered grief. You're dealing with, obviously, the loss of your wife, You're mourning the lost years that she should have had, seeing her boy grow up. You're mourning the lost years for him. And you're also mourning the fact that his life has now changed.
Yeah.
In a way that you wouldn't want it to change at the age of 8. So there's lots of different things you're dealing with. And then you, as time goes on, you have to deal with mourning the loss of identity, because I felt I had no other choice but to step away from Sky. And, you know, we were... I think blessing sounds like the wrong kind of word, but I always feel I need to explain this because I've had enough comments on social media saying it's all right for you. But, you know, we had life insurance for both of us because, you know, the world of broadcasting.
Yep.
Yeah. There's not many staff jobs out there. It's freelance, you know, and so you need to put things in place for the day, which you hope won't come, when you can't work, if you get ill yourself. And we thankfully put it in place for both of us. And it meant that obviously there was a payout that gave me the financial stability and security to be able to step away from Sky. But you're dealing with the loss of identity.
Like, yeah. Oh,
who am I anymore? Yes, I have the most amazing, wondrous, important job of all, Ethan's dad.
Mm.
But who am I beyond that?
No, I get it.
And yeah. When people would say to me, and still do, well, what do you do now? I mean, obviously, I've started my own podcast. I want to get back into broadcasting. But right now, beyond that, I don't have an awful lot to say. I've written a book. I'm not... kind of minimalizing that, but yeah, you mourn that kind of, well, who am I
yep.
anymore? What am I about?
And so obviously you've gone from a two-parent household to
yes.
a one-parent household.
Yeah.
Did you used to get involved before obviously the tragedy happened? Did you used to get involved in the day-to-day stuff, like picking up, dropping to school, doing the lunch, all of that kind of stuff? Or did it all come as like a new thing to you?
No, I did quite a bit of it. And I think the reason why, one is that I was very fortunate in that the way work life
yeah.
happened with Sky is that, you know, in the week I would quite often have maybe a couple of evening games, but my main Premier League game was always the Saturday lunchtime. So I was around a lot in the day, you know, when he was, I used to get him up and then Gemma would often take him to school, sometimes I would, and quite often around in the evenings, you know. So I was very, very lucky. I had what a lot of parents don't necessarily have. But also because we were unable to have any more kids, so we wanted a brother or sister for Ethan, but Gemma, we found out as we went down the path of trying for number two, had a very serious fertility problem that meant chances of conceiving okay. naturally were close to zero. So we trod the IVF route twice. First time didn't work, second time did work, but then she miscarried only a month later. So we'd had to deal with that huge disappointment of no more kids. But I think what it did is once we came out of the kind of fog of that period, and for me it lasted too long, but once we'd emerged from that, you just thought, we've got this amazing boy, actually looking at what she had, he's in some ways a bit of a miracle.
Did you yeah. find that period really hard? Because you just there was a throwaway comment there.
Horrendous.
The fog yeah. was too long for you, so it really hit you hard that you couldn't have any more children.
Yeah, because I think as a guy, you want to sort, the typical guy reaction, I want to sort this out, let's throw some more money at it.
Yeah.
But money doesn't help you when you're dealing with emotional problems. Mm. And it's really, really hard for a lot of people. And I think the social media age doesn't help, because obviously people put out very, very kind of tailored versions of their life. And your perception is that everybody else, and you don't just need social media, sometimes you can just see it because there's a bump or there happens to be another kid in the pushchair or whatever. But you kind of have this image that everyone else is absolutely fine on this point. And I'd often say that it felt like other friends and family were popping out kids like a cash dispenser pops out £10 notes.
Yeah.
Probably for some of them that wasn't the truth yeah. actually, and having had conversations in the years since. But I got very angry and bitter that I couldn't sort this out. I desperately wanted a brother or sister for Ethan. I didn't want him to grow up on his own. And that was kind of my first bout of depression. I stayed in the kind of dark place, the cave of anger, for too long, and then began to really dive, but didn't come away from work that time. But you know what I think it did, as we emerged from that, as I emerged from it, and men and women deal with it very differently, I kind of isolated myself. Gemma lent into friends and cried and talked with them. But I think once that fog dissipated, then you just go, what an amazing gift this kid
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
But also you rinse out every moment. So the year, I think it's year two at his school, that's the year that when they do the nativity, they get a speaking part. This is the only year where they guaranteed a speaking part. We went to every showing.
Did you?
You're here again. Yeah, because we're only going to get to do this once.
Yeah.
There's lots of parents there with two, three kids. They're going to, obviously, they'll only see that child once in that, but then they've got it to look forward to the year after, or maybe the year after that. We only got one shot of everything. So I think that made you think, right, I'm going to rinse out when these moments come. And I remember, so I'm going to have a slight tangent here. I remember a summer before last, and I was a bit slightly preachy mode, but a mum, on the day they broke up for the summer holidays, she'd clearly been on that website called timeanddate.com, where you can put in a date and another date and work out to the nearest millisecond that the length of time between the two dates.
Right.
She'd obviously put in the start of the summer holidays, 2 o'clock, on whatever day it was in July, and the day they go back in September. And she put on Facebook, only 6 weeks, something days, something hours till they go back. Can't wait.
Oh my God, wow.
I looked at it and thought, oh, I feel really sad reading that. And I couldn't resist. So I just put on it and I said, look, I get, you know, I was feeling the same thing. I was like, 6 weeks?
Yeah.
What do I do with him for 6 weeks? And ostensibly on my own. But I also looked at it and thought, but that's really sad. And I actually said to her, I said, I won't say her name, but I said, one day you'll look back on this period and you'll wish you had one more summer holiday with them.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So I know it's hard, but try and enjoy it. And she went, you're so right. Deleted post.
Oh, good. Yeah, well done.
The thing is, though, it's so easy to say that. Like, even half term's just been, I was like, oh gosh, it's half term. It's come up upon me, and I'm, you know, trying to juggle everything. But then it's over, and you're like, okay. So now we can't do anything because it's back to school.
I always miss him when he goes back. Yeah. I dread him going back more than he does, I think. Because I miss my mate. Enjoy hanging out with him. You know?
Luna woke up this morning and she was like, it's a school day. She's only at preschool, but she tells everyone she's at big school.
Oh yeah, same as Axel. We call it school, but it's preschool. Yeah.
She was just desperate to go back. She was like, it's not a Lucy day. That's the lovely girl who looks after the 3 days. It's not a mummy day, it's a school day. I was like, yeah, off you go, out the door. So it's not, you know, they love it too.
Yeah.
So single dad. So what was the hardest part for you after losing your wife? Because my husband will always say that, obviously, him and his ex split up. He then had Isla half the time and he was going to play groups. Mm. Obviously, different stage for you, but people were looking at him and going, oh, you know, not including him in stuff. And he'd be the only man walking into a room full of women. And he really felt it.
Yeah.
So for you, what were the struggles?
I think one of the challenges was, I think people, it wasn't necessarily didn't trust me, but didn't think I could hack it. And I prioritised him from the off. And was always wanting to be very open with him about how I was feeling, my emotions, and giving him permission to be very open about his. That was one of the biggest challenges. There's so many big questions came in the very early weeks. And that room that I talked about, when we used to sort of sit there, and I sometimes used to lie next to him in the morning and wait for him to wake up. And that period, he had some big questions. Like, I remember literally, I think it was less than a week after his mum dies. And I was lying next to him and he wakes up and he said, Daddy, I said, yeah. He said, what are we going to do with mummy's clothes?
Wow.
And I was like, oh my goodness. A, I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah. B, I didn't want to think about it. But what I learnt on mornings like that and going forward is that it's really important to go there with them when those questions come. The immediate response is often going to be, let's, I don't want to talk about that right now. Why are you asking that? We're not going there.
Mm.
But I learned that actually it's important you do go there. So I'd have those conversations with him. I remember one night putting him to bed and he said, Daddy, I said, yep. He said, you could die tonight. And I went, oh, don't be so silly. But of course he comes back and says, yeah, but mum died really quickly. So why not? And straight away I'm thinking, yeah, this is important here. This is a fear. This is an anxiety he's got. So I then explained, well, look, we learned as time went on that actually mummy was ill for a lot longer and not many people pass away that quickly. I said, I feel fine tonight. You know, I don't feel ill, so I think I'll be okay. As a parent, and it's one of the things the kids' counsellors said to me very early on, and it's a hard thing to take on board, but it's true. You cannot promise kids things that simply aren't true. So that line, I'll always be there for you, isn't true, because you won't, not necessarily will always be there for them. And you want to say it to reassure them, but you'd say things like, I'm going to walk with you for as long as I possibly can. And he was talking about marriage within 10 days.
He was talking about you getting married.
Yeah, on the way back from school, Gemma's mum was on the back seat, Granny was on the back seat, and we were just driving home, and he said, Daddy, I went, yeah. And it was always that tone, I was like, here we go, questions, right, stand by, get ready. And he said, do you think you'll get married again one day?
Oh.
And again, your initial thought is, what are you on about? I was talking about this. And I remember looking in the rearview mirror and seeing his granny's sort of look like, good luck. But we talked about it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, because actually what it was, and I maybe didn't realise this at the time, but looking back at it, is it's an eight-year-old trying to work out what is life going to look like going forward.
Yeah.
How's it going to be different? I already know that it's massively different, but are some of the things that I had before going to be there again? Family life, a kind of structure of a mother figure again in my life.
Yeah. Yes.
And so he was trying to make sense of it. And so the temptation is to shut them down and go, ridiculous question, we're not talking about it, crank the radio up. But I learned that it's really important, because I'd say to any parent, and it's not just about grief, it's, you know, awful lot of parents are dealing with kids who are struggling with anxiety or whatever it might be, is when those difficult questions come, keep the door open. The temptation is to shut it and go, I can't deal with this, I'm not going there. But actually, every time you close down a conversation, every time a question comes, and listen, you won't always have the answers, but if you won't go there with them, you eventually shut the door and they go, well, I'm not going to ask mum or dad a question anymore, because she never wants to answer.
So we'll be back right after this.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
A brand new podcast bringing you some amazing facts that are complete nonsense.
Imagine the likes that would get on Instagram, you having a quick one up a lamppost on the moon. Incredible.
So you basically saying the reason the dinosaurs stopped living is because they all collectively made a decision to have no more children.
They're talking about, I think until 10 years ago, I still shared the bathwater that my parents were in.
You can find us wherever you got this podcast. Just search for Baffled Amazing Facts.
Now, where were we?
Both Georgia and I have that kind of openness in the households that we run. Yeah. I think it's really important. I grew up in that household, so did Georgia.
Yeah.
But a lot of questions come in at what age do you start talking to your children about certain subjects like, you know, periods or, I don't know, boyfriends and girlfriends, kissing, I don't know, whatever it is. At what point is the right moment to say, let's have this conversation? And I think what you're saying is actually kids need to know. They have to be armed with the information. You can't keep saying to them, oh, no, we'll talk about it another time.
Or give them like a silly story.
Silly story.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you think it's changed every aspect of your parenting in that kind of space, that you'll talk about anything, you guys can discuss anything?
Yeah, but it has changed. It's quite interesting watching how, listen, grief is a very individual journey. So you can't say just because this is the way Ethan was, therefore, if someone listening to this has gone through it, therefore their child should be doing this as well. But what tended to happen with him is that period of multitudes of different questions and that openness and that honesty with each other has changed over time, because what then comes into play is that for him, his biggest anxiety is you. He knows that in terms of his immediate family, I'm it.
Yeah.
If I go, I hate to use this word, but it's true, he's an orphan.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and so he wants to protect you. So as time went on, he wouldn't ask the questions so much. And if he was seeing his child counsellor on a given week, and I say, well, all right, what happened with Colin this week? What'd you do? He wasn't so open as he was. And initially I struggled with it. I was like, I missed this openness. Where's it gone?
Yeah.
I put pressure on him. Like, come on, Ethan, tell me what happened. No, I'm not happy with you just saying we blew up balloons. I want to, you know, what was the point behind the blowing up of the balloons or modelling that clay with your counsellor? But I learned that actually that's because this is his protectiveness. He wants to protect me from worrying. And actually, you are kind of like a, you're the kind of steering wheel in terms of where he's at mentally. If I'm happy, he's happy. Mm. If I'm stressed, he feels stressed. If I get worried, he gets worried. And, you know, he's like little chirps away in the car. If I get stressed in the drive, he says, calm down, daddy. Well, they almost start to feel a little bit of the shoes left by the mum who's gone.
Yeah.
It's a weird one, but they do.
And when he asked you about remarrying, what did you say to him?
I said, I haven't really thought about that, Ethan, to be honest. But I think I said, I know that daddy's not really good at doing life on his own. I don't think mummy would want me to spend the rest of my life on my own. So maybe, I said, I'm getting on a bit now, so I might not find anybody, but maybe one day I will. So I didn't say no and I didn't say yes, because I don't want to promise him to say yes, absolutely. And also didn't want to say no because I didn't want him to then think.
That's
massive
from you.
Yeah.
That's huge from you, because in 10 days after you lose your partner, your life partner, you're talking about, you know, that's amazing, because actually probably most people's reaction would be, I can't talk about this right now.
You know, shut up, what are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But this leads on nicely, actually, to where you are in your life now, because you have met somebody else.
I have.
So can we talk about her?
Of course we can.
So just tell us how you guys met and how that was for you, falling in love again.
Well, just one of those moments where you just feel that immediate connection with someone. Like, I feel like I've known her for forever, but I've known her 5 minutes. And we started hanging out a bit, and then came the moment to meet Ethan.
Yeah, and did you...
I was going to say, did you think about how you was going to do that? Did you tell him where you were going when you were meeting her?
Not initially, no, because I thought if she never wants to see me again, I don't he doesn't need to know. But as the time came to meet, I know it's another area of life I've been very, very honest and open with him about, because he's part of me, he's my boy. And I want him to, listen, it doesn't mean he's privy to everything that goes on in my life, but it's important he feels part of it.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so I did say, look, I've met this girl and I'd like you to meet her. So I brought her around one evening. And
how old was he?
He was very, very open. He'd got used to our house being a little bit like a revolving door. It's a very weird period after it all happened. Like, lovely, but weird, in that lots of people who I hadn't sort of seen or heard from in a long time want to come and see you.
Yep.
And hang out with you and take you for lunch. And it was lovely in lots of ways because it kept me kind of busy. But looking back, it's weird because you kind of really heard from them since. I don't know whether they were coming to pay their respects or something. I don't know.
Just bringing love.
Yeah, maybe it was just that. But Ethan had kind of got used to people being around. But they just hit it off. And they've just got the most special relationships, because my life can't be all about him. I've sometimes got to put myself first. So if he'd struggle with her, but I really loved her, then we'd have to find a way to make it work. But I've never had to worry about that. She's never been a mum herself. You know, she's not been in this situation before. But they just had this kind of immediate connection. And the relationship that's kind of blossomed between the two of them is just... it's been amazing to watch. And I just feel incredibly blessed and privileged and very lucky that I've met someone as amazing as her. And alongside that, I've got someone who's just become this huge figure for my boy.
And
we don't live together at the moment because she works in St Albans, I'm based in Reading, so we see each other, you know, weekends and occasionally in the week. And, you know, he really misses her when she's not around, you know, and she misses him and I miss her. So, you know, she's a one-off. She's a total one-off.
Have there been, because obviously... for her, she's suddenly become a step-parent, really. And have
you know about this.
And I do know about this firsthand, because I've been her.
Mm.
And she, you know, I've been the new person on the scene that has been introduced to her. Obviously, Isla was, I don't know, 14 months old, I think, so slightly different age. But still, you know, you feel the heavy responsibility of suddenly having to love and take care of somebody else's child. So has anything come up for her? And have you guys been kind of open about all of that? Because it is a big deal being a step-mum.
Yeah, and I think it's a big deal as well when it's within the context of this kind of story. It's not in any way diminishing your experience, but I think it's a situation that nobody chose for Gemma to die at the age of 40.
Yeah.
You know, so Dorina comes into this place where, you know, no one had wanted this to happen. And so there's that kind of comparison.
Yeah.
Well, I can never live up to this person. And I do think, and I'm not saying this in any way, shape or form to lessen who Gemma was as a person, but I do think when anybody dies, they kind of get deified.
Oh,
they almost
absolutely.
Become this impossible figure
yes.
to live up to.
Yeah, of course.
And so Doreena has, you know, at times understandably struggled with that. Well, I can never be as good as Gemma. I'm never going to be good enough cook. I'm never going to be this. And I always try and say to her and encourage her to say, all I need you to be is you. Mm. That's the person I've fallen in love with. That's the person Ethan loves being alongside. And, you know, it's a big struggle. I know you've seen this, and there was an amazing documentary, if people listening haven't seen it, and hopefully it's still on iPlayer, but there was a brilliant documentary with Rio Ferdinand, who'd done the Being Mum and Dad documentary a few years before when he lost his wife. And Kate has come into his life, and Kate has now married him, and you know he's got three kids. It's a slightly different situation, but at the heart still the same story.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Doreena was watching it at home in St Albans. I was watching it in Reading, and do you know what, it was so good to watch that, to hear, for Doreena to know that she's not going mad, that actually some of the things she's felt about second best and never been good enough and I shouldn't be here and all those kind of things, to hear someone else vocalising that in the way Kate did so honestly reassured her massively. It helped me understand in a much fuller way what it's been like for Doreena, because it's like with anything in life, when we go through stuff, if we've never been through it, you'll never fully understand it because you can't walk in that person's shoes.
Yeah.
But it was just amazing to watch. And I was chatting to Ethan about it because we were talked about, you know, going forward, what's he going to call Doreena long term if we continue as a three. And I said to him, what would you call Doreena? He said, oh, I don't know. And Doreena's surname's Jeb. You know, maybe just sort of Jebby or something like that.
I love that.
I love it.
And anyway, that night, I just thought, I'm going to see if he wants to watch it, the Rio Kate documentary. And I explained to him what it was. And I said, I think this might give you an understanding of both feeling kind of comforted knowing that other families have gone through something similar, but also understanding what this has been like for Doreena. So he sat there and he absolutely was glued to the screen for an
wow.
hour. And about 10 minutes before the end, because it was the day before Valentine's Day, he said, Daddy, can I have some cards? He got some card. And he drew this and wrote this Valentine's card to Doreena. And in it he said, look, I know you're not my real mum, but then wrote this amazing words about what she means to him. And then he wrote on the left-hand side, he said, I want you to be my mum.
Wow.
Which was incredible. It still makes me quite emotional. But it was an incredible moment. And it wasn't something I said, you need to say that. I would never say you must call her a different name. It's totally up to you what you say going forward. And to see him write those words. And, you know, great. And also reassuring for her to understand that that's how big a figure she is in his life.
Yeah. And how have your families responded to Doreena coming in?
My family have been, actually, they've all been amazing. I think it's been harder for probably Gemma's sister.
Yes. Yes.
But I think when Doreena has understandably struggled with this, what I try and say and others try and say is this is not about you.
Yeah.
It's not about who you are, because, you know, everybody who's met her said the same thing. What a lovely person she is. You can't not like her. But I think it's the situation is for, you know, Gemma's sister, a reminder of what's gone.
Mm.
And also a reminder that life is changing and Simon and Ethan are heading in a different direction. It's not that we're leaving her behind, but she can feel that kind of sense in which we're heading in a different direction, that fear that, well, I won't really be part of the family anymore, but she'll always be Ethan's auntie and Gemma's mum, who has been amazing with Doreena and has welcomed her with open arms, has been a great source of encouragement for her and has always said to her, you just need to be you. And it's been a real source of comfort for Wendy, Gemma's mum, in that she's been honest enough to say that was one thing she worried about the day I met someone, how would they be with her grandson?
It's probably the only thing she was thinking about, really.
And ultimately, that's my responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, who I choose is my business and actually nobody else's, but they're going to look out for Ethan, obviously. And it's been a huge source of comfort just to see her grandson having this amazing relationship with Dorina. And it's so it's I'm very aware that for others, and there may be people listening to this who've walked a similar path, for whom meeting someone new has been quite divisive. It can be. It can be really divisive. But I think people have to understand that there's nothing wrong with wanting to be happy again. And you shouldn't be delivered a life sentence of evermore being lonely and miserable. You know, for the biggest thing for me in terms of going forward has been wanting to embrace life again, because it's so important for me, but also for Ethan. I don't
to
want
see you happy.
A second best life.
And as you said before, when you're stressed, he's stressed.
Yes.
So surely when you're happy, he's happy.
Yeah.
So it's great for everybody.
Yeah, and I try and say that to Doreen, is that she doesn't see the Ethan when she's not around, obviously. And I do say to her, you know, he's miserable when you're not around, but there's a marked change in when you're here. The laughter begins to fill the house again. The smile is much more evident than it is when it's just the two of us. But he's not doesn't say it as much anymore, but he's always said I don't like it when it's just the two of us.
Yeah,
it's a big old house.
But also just the maternal energy around him.
Yeah,
there's going to be moments, you know, during the rest of his life where he'll be able to go to Dorina and talk to her about things that necessarily
he doesn't want to come to you about
first off. And that actually that step parent step child relationship can be so special.
Yeah,
but it's slightly different in your scenario because you've obviously that person's not here any longer, but so maybe, you know, fighting against the ghost and all that, it's actually not about that. It's about those two people forming a special relationship, that special bond, which will go on and on and on and on.
Exactly. And the house has been hard for her as well, and it's on the market at the moment trying to sell it because we need our own place, our own kind of, we're writing a new chapter already, but a chapter that's not anchored in the past. And it has been hard for her coming into a house where she knows that was our family house and that was Gemma's kitchen and all those kind of things. So it's really important that we start a new chapter somewhere else. But again, that was something that we wanted to do together, the three of us. So we sat down, went out one Saturday afternoon and drew one of those Venn diagrams, three circles, and we each wrote down what was the most important thing to us in terms of where we live. And Dorina wrote hers, I wrote mine, and Ethan wrote his. And that makes him feel part of it. We're not imposing this on him. We're not saying, Ethan, we are moving.
Yeah.
But we're just saying to him, look, we are going to move, but let's talk about it. What are the kind of things important for you? What worries do you have about moving schools and, you know, having to make new friends and all those kind of things? But it's so important, not just if you've been through something like this, just in parenting as a whole, that you keep your kids part of every conversation. It's not that you're giving them the right to decide on things, but I think including them on big things like moving or whatever it might be, or daddy or mummy changing jobs. It's not saying that you're going to decide whether I take this new job. We're just saying, look, let's talk about it. Daddy and mummy might be changing job. How do you feel about that? I might be traveling more, so I might not be around quite as much as I have been. How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
I think it's really important. So he knows that he's very much part of going forward and the plans, and he feels happier because of that.
I guess it's them learning to understand the process to making decisions, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you include them in decision making, they then learn how to make decisions themselves because they've been through the process.
Yeah.
I've really never thought about it like that.
Respect the way you're doing this. I'm like in awe of you, actually.
I'm not that good.
No, you are. I think he is.
Yeah, I do.
Two more questions.
Yes.
First one, are you going to have any more kids?
Oh, that's an Ethan question.
Well, there you go. I'm channeling my inner Ethan today.
I would love to. I mean, he would listen. He's going to be quite a bit older than them. I know that, but I'd love for him to have a brother or a sister.
Yeah.
Do you know? Only because I used to sometimes think, my dad's not in the best of health now, and he's in a home, and all of my family, my two sisters, my mum, and my dad live back in Norfolk. That's where I'm originally from. So. Mm-hmm. It's hard getting up there to see him as much as I wish I could. But I'm kind of comforted in the fact that I know that my two sisters, Becky and Hannah, are able to see him quite regularly. Mum goes to see him every day. But I sometimes wondered about, you know, Ethan carrying the burden of maybe me one day not being so fit and able of having to deal with that on my own. Because we can share our kind of worries about dad between the three of us and the four of us with my mum as well. And I always think, I want him to just have someone there for him as well as he grows older. And I just think he would be just the best brother. So period. Although although by the time it happened, he'd probably be on Lego. But I said, you have to learn to share a bit more.
Oh, mate, that's a whole other conversation. Exactly. Okay, well, we're excited about that.
Yes. Yeah.
And the best piece of advice for anybody listening that's going through potentially introducing a new partner to their child, or you know, has just become a step parent in some capacity, the best piece of advice for them.
The best piece of advice would be for the child is to be open and honest, to keep them part of the conversation without giving them the authority to decide, because that still has to remain yours. But just be open and honest, and don't be afraid to say things that maybe they'll find a bit weird, like, you know, I'm starting to fall in love with this person. And you might feel bad for saying that, but actually it's good for them to know and to begin to understand what love is actually all about. And for the person coming into that situation, for you or for someone like Dorina, I would just say, know this, you're not in there to replace, you're in there to be you. I love her for who she is. I love everything she stands for. She is unique in the same way Gemma was unique, in the same way that everybody in this room is unique, totally and utterly irreplaceable. That's why grief is so hard, because the person who's gone is a one-off. That's why humanity is so amazing, because we are all one-offs. There's no one else out there like the three of us. There isn't. There just isn't. And once you realise that, then you can go, you don't need to be someone you're not. You don't need to worry about trying to be the best cook ever. You don't need to worry about filling someone's shoes. Fill your shoes. You're already doing that. And love me for you, love me for who I am, and forget about everybody else.
That is lovely.
Oh, love this chat. I don't want you to go.
Oh, sorry.
Simon for PM. Simon,
no.
Thank you for being so open and honest.
Nice
and,
pleasure.
I really, as we've said, just I'm kind of blown away by the way you've handled it all and the way you're bringing up your son.
Oh, thank you.
We're all behind you.
We are. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Absolute pleasure.
Wow, it's really hard to know what to say, really, because it was just such a powerful, impactful conversation. I think he's so brave. I can't believe how he's kind of come out the other side and met somebody again. And that amazing moment where he was talking about his son writing a Valentine's Day card to his new partner. I mean, that was just like, wasn't a dry eye in the studio, was there?
No, there really wasn't. I just think that also the way he's bringing up his son is unbelievable, actually. And it sounds like he's really, really done a great job in such a terrible situation, you know, to keep his son sort of grounded and happy as he can be and in touch with his emotions. When he was talking about them sort of staying in his bedroom for however long and that's sort of where they set up camp. Oh gosh, it just you can just picture it. I think he really took us on a journey there, didn't he? Like, you could just picture everything they were going through, and
it's the worst thing that you could ever imagine happening. And it's really weird, because the way that our brains are programmed, I mean, I don't know about you, G, but I'm always thinking, oh God, this is so perfect at home. Like, what's going to happen? Something bad's going to happen, especially after I lost my dad. Because the worst thing in my life at that time has happened to me. I always go to like the bad stuff first, and I just, we're so lucky. We've got such amazing families. We've got amazing kids. Like, we've got this wonderful bubble that we live in, and that's what he had. And then it all came crumbling down. So it's like so brave of him to come out the other side and speak the way he does. Actually, that'd be functioning day to day. I don't know. It's an awful thought.
So it is. But I think, you know, what we can all take away from that is, you know, the things about counting down till your kids go back to school. A lot of us right now are counting down the days until our kids go back to school. But actually, we need to just live in these moments, because stuff can, you know, your whole world can be turned upside down in a second. And I know it's so easy to say that, because when day to day, when you're in it, it doesn't feel like that. But I guess you do sometimes just have to take a step back and put things into perspective and think, okay, you know, the house is chaos. We've had a terrible day for kids. They've been, but how lucky are we to be with them, to all be together.
Very wise, Jude. Very wise.
Well, that is it for us for today. We're obviously going to be back on Friday with one of our expert podcasts. It's a really, really good one. I hope you're going to love it. As always, we would love you to rate, review and subscribe to our podcast. And if you could please tell one mum mate about us and get her listening, that would really help us out. And then we can kind of just keep spreading the word.
Yeah, please do tag us in your stories when you're listening to the podcast. We want to see you. We want to see you out running when you're listening, or doing your cleaning, or laying in the bath. No nudie bits, please, but laying in the bath and doing whatever you're doing. Can you imagine?
Oh, that's what I would do. Me and my best just hanging out listening to my mama's podcast. That would be great if you could. And you can drop us a message at my mama's or my personal account, which is at Zoe Hardman.
Thanks so much, and see you Friday.
See you on Friday.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. We know times are very difficult right now, and if you want any more information about coronavirus, go to nhs.uk/coronavirus.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.